welcome to another episode of The Ali Show. And today we have another special guest, Gina G. Professional fighter. Well, I say fighter because I'm not really sure. You actually do all. So you do MMA, you do boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu as well, I assume?
Yeah, I jump in a little bit of jiu-jitsu.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I don't know if Eugene will call it jiu-jitsu, mine, but...
It's like wrestling and jiu-jitsu, a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, before I ask any questions, anyway, how are you, Gina?
I'm good.
How was your whole Christmas, end of year break been with the family?
New Year's, I love Christmas. Christmas is my thing, like... Mm-hmm.
Is it like in your family, is it like a big gathering and stuff like that?
Yeah, like everybody gathers together at my grandmother's. She's 92 now, so
wow.
She's our...
Your grandmother's 92?
And she's strong, Ali. She's strong.
Wow.
So she broke down a door like a couple months ago. She thought there was like a kid locked in there and she broke it down with her shoulder. And she didn't like end up at the hospital, like not injured, like fully strong as an ox.
Wow, yeah. At 92.
92. But anyway, yeah, so we all go there.
Yeah.
We all go to her house.
Up in Auckland?
Yeah,
or
North Shore. Nice. Yeah.
Oh, easy. So like how many siblings do you have?
I'm one of five.
Five, yeah.
So I've got three older brothers and a younger sister.
And they're all in Auckland as well, or just
no.
around?
This is the first time in years there's been three of us at the same time in New Zealand.
In
years, maybe 10 years or longer.
Wow.
So we're quite lucky. We've got my brother here and my sister, and then two of my other brothers are overseas. Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's the other problem now with this whole pandemic and the border closures, and makes it a little bit harder for your siblings to come back here. But well, you said three out of the five. Which is more than what they usually.
My mum's not complaining that she's got three homes. So.
Wow. Anyway, that's good. Like, you know, and you get to spend with like your grand, you know, your grandmom and like
aunties, uncles, cousins.
Yeah. And it's like, you are of Tongan background. Is that correct?
Yeah. So my grandmother who we visited with on Christmas, she's Tongan. Mm. So my mum's Tongan and my dad's Kiwi with a lot of other things, but
yeah.
Yeah,
and that's the one. Like, you know, you have a couple of our guests before, and they, you know, they usually say like when the islanders have family gatherings, it's like huge things.
Yeah,
whole family turns up, big meals, feast.
Yeah. I mean, on Christmas Day, it was a smaller Christmas at my grandmother's because so many of my relatives are overseas now. But she had all of her children there, my grandmother. So all my aunties and uncles were there, and maybe half of her grandkids and half of her great grandkids, and there was still would have been, you know, more than 80 people, surely. Yeah.
Wow. Do you think when you think about it, like,
or 60,
would you imagine you'd get to 92?
Yeah, only the good die young, Ali. People like me and you, brother, we're gonna live forever. My nan is the last one standing out of all of her siblings.
Wow.
She's one of 13. I think 13 or 14.
13.
And she's the last one standing, yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty big family. I think, yeah, my...
And she was a naughty one, I think. I've been told she was a naughty one.
I think my mum's side of her family, she has like 8 or 10 siblings or something.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. That's a big number, man. I don't know how, you know, people back in the day did it, but like, you know, you look at this day and age.
Yeah.
It's not easy, man. It's not easy. Anyway, before we drift too far, Gina, for those who might not know who you are, could you give a brief introduction about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name's Gina G, also known as a crazy horse. I don't know. I come from Auckland. Mm-hmm. I'm Tonga, New Zealand. I'm a proud Tonga, New Zealand. As white as I am, I represent my gold tooth. I've got five children. I've been fighting for 7 years or just over 7 years. And... yeah, but I don't know how else to describe myself. I'm a mother that fights that lives out in Auckland, and
we'll dive a little bit into each and every one of those. But what I want to know is like 7 years ago, how did you get into fighting? Like
okay, so 7 years ago, it wasn't actually when I started getting into martial arts. Mm. I was 12 years old, I think roughly 12 years old, might have been 11, 12. And my brother, Louis, was training out of Liga North Shore with Eddie Tongalahi. And he was doing some Muay Thai training.
Curtis Weeks was here. I think I heard that name. He actually said he was training out of that name. Do you know who?
Okay. I'm not sure. Curtis. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure the Liga at the time was like fairly new. So my mum and my aunties used to go and train with Eddie, and I was only little then when they first started, like really little. And then my brother started and he did a couple of tournaments, did quite well, and I started to train as well. So maybe 11, yeah, 11, 12. I really wanted to fight, but my mum, being the way that she is or being raised, she didn't believe, you know, fighting is for women or for girls. I was a little girl at the time. And it was a more of a boy sport. So my brother competed and I didn't. And I think that it was, I look back at that and I took a very different path once I hit, you know, 12 years old, 13. And I feel if my mum had allowed me to compete at that young age, it would have really have kept a different form of discipline in my life. And it would have kept me on a totally different track if I'd been able to kind of explore that. But anyway, we're not being able to compete. I lost a bit of interest. Like fitness isn't fun if you're not getting anything out of it at the end. Yes, and you know, so, I went away from it. And then 7-8 years ago, when I first started boxing, I just had my daughter, Daisy. She's almost 10 now. So she was about 9 months old when I started. I just couldn't get rid of the baby weight. And my ex-husband at the time was fighting. And I started to jump into like the women's, you know, boxer size, box fit classes. And the coach really liked me. And he was like, oh, have you ever thought about, you know, jumping in and having a go? And I was like, yeah, like, man, I've been fighting since school days. Like, I've always loved a good scrap, you know, or I'm that person standing on the side kind of watching. So I thought it would be kind of cool. And then he called me a few weeks later and said there was a girl that used to be a good boxer, but she hadn't boxed for a while, like had a bit of a break and wanted some sparring and was asking if I was keen to jump in. And I did. I jumped in with this girl and I thought, wow, she's, you know, amazing, this woman like out here like boxing around. And but I did really good against her. When I left, I was like, man, if this girl's like been boxing for more than a minute, you know, and I was holding my own, I was like, I really want to give this a go. So my coach, Russell Finn, at the time, we were training at the PCYC in Inala in Brisbane, Inala PCYC, and he chucked me into a corporate boxing fight against this girl. She'd had one or two corporates. I'd had none in the ring before. And we drove up from Brisbane to Toowoomba and had my first fight against this girl. And I remember watching her on the pads, and I had my teammate, Dee Dee, at the time. She was like a, you know, she'd already won Queensland titles and had represented Australia, and she was pretty up there. And she still is doing really, really well. Anyway, she was warming me up on the pads, and I think she could see me looking at hearing the girl like, hey, 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 like just smashing the pads. And she was like, she looked at me and she said straight up, she said, don't worry about all that heist heist on the pads. Once you throw two straight down the middle, you know, we'll see what's good. And I was like, okay. And I was holding on to this like advice from Dee Dee, like with every bit of my mind, like, okay, Dee Dee said, if I throw straight two down the middle, like this girl's not gonna, you know, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And she was right. I just threw my two straight down the middle and caught this girl. I stopped her, the corner threw in the towel in the second round, and the whole car ride from Toowoomba back to Brisbane, my coach, I was like, coach, you got to register me. You got to register me. I want to fight Queensland State titles. I want to box this, da, 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 da. I just caught the bug and just loved it and never looked back. Never looked back. And it's provided discipline for me that you don't get from just being a parent or just having a great job or just being, you know, a good person. It's a different type of discipline, and I love that part of it.
So the first fight that was a boxing fight.
Yes.
And so that was in, what was the name of the gym again?
I was training, boxing out of Inala PCYC.
Oh, okay. This was in Australia.
This is an Aussie. Yeah.
So when did you then, because I understand you were training out of Balmoral Liga after that, or was that still?
So I was training out of BLG Bamoliga.
Yeah, after. Sorry. Before we get there.
Yeah.
So when you did that first boxing fight, the corporate fight.
Yeah.
And then after that, did you compete like in the amateur boxing?
Yeah, that was just the beginning.
How did that go?
Was the beginning. So after that first corporate fight I had in Toowoomba, my coach Russell registered me, and I jumped in a lot of tournaments after that. I had maybe in Australia. Maybe like 16 boxing fights, or maybe a little more, a little less. Before I came back, I won the Queensland state title. I won Australian Golden Gloves. Wow. I won the novice titles when I first started. I won the novice titles a couple of times. I won the Southeast Queensland title. I went to Tonga at the time to trial for the South Pacific team, which I got into as well. I won that. That was while I was boxing out of Australia.
Oh, okay. But you represented the Tongan national team.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't end up traveling with them. There were two tournaments that I was meant to travel with them to, and that was the South Pacific Games and then over to Scotland.
Ooh.
I got as far as Sydney and came back. I'd never left my kids before. That was a really hard one for me. So, I was living in Aussie with no family, so my kids were with me like every day, and they were all little. And the trip for Tonga, going over to Scotland, kind of got a bit rushed at the end, and I hadn't really prepared leaving them. And before I knew it, I had to travel within 48 hours. They wanted me to go a bit earlier for something. And I was like, got on the plane and I got to Sydney and I was like, no, man, I can't do it. Like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't leave the kids at that time. So I went back, and I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. I'm glad that I stayed with them at the time, because they were all really little. Like, my daughter was, would have only been two or three, you know? And wow. Because they were all close together, there was a lot of little kids, and it was just too much, so I went back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how long were you in Australia before you decided to move back to New Zealand?
We lived over there for maybe 4 years, maybe a little longer. And it wasn't, we left in a hurry too. It wasn't like we're planning to go back home and stuff like that. It was a bit of a hoo-ha coming home, and it wasn't planned. It happened in a hurry. I was heartbroken leaving my coach. You know, your coach kind of becomes another parent to you. And
when you feel a connection.
You do. And when I look back at it now, I'm like, well, it was actually kind of traumatizing leaving the way that we did, you know, leaving my community and my gym and my friends, they'd become my family. So it was quite difficult, but I had to do what I had to do for my family at the time, and that was to come home. But when I was living in Australia, I visited New Zealand almost every year, and I would come and train with Lolo. So that's how that first started. Lolo,
for those who don't know, it's Lolo Hemuli from Balmoral Liga.
Sorry, Lolo. Hey, you better come correct. Before I left New Zealand and went to Australia, my ex-husband at the time, who's the father of my children, was training with Lolo. And this is when they had they were training out of a workshop garage type thing out in West Auckland.
Yeah. Was this the back of the church one or no?
No. This is another one.
Okay.
But I was pregnant with my fourth baby at the time. So I was carrying Mosiah. I must have been about 5 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant. And my ex-husband was getting ready for a fight. And I'd quite often come and watch trainings just because I enjoyed it. And I said to Lolo, Lolo, after I have this baby, I'm going to take up boxing. And he was like, whoo. Like, he, you know, had a little laugh, and he was like, okay, Gina. You know, he's shared this story before many times. And he said, okay, Gina, when you have the baby, you come and see me. And long story short, I had the baby, got pregnant with my fifth baby straight away. Like, my fourth kid wasn't even 3 months old. Like, we're already knocked up. So I didn't have a chance to get back into the training. Then we moved to Australia, and then I started. So when I started boxing over there, I'd come back for these holidays, and I'd always link up with Lolo, and I'd always go in and have a train. And the first time I came back, and he was like, whoa, you know, I didn't believe you, you know, and you told me that you're going to take it up. So he was quite keen to work with me. You know, we always got on really well. So I'd come back, and he'd let me train with another girl at the time that was fighting for him, and would do work together. So as soon as I came back from Australia, I didn't actually stay here. I took a year off. So I took a year off, and I took my kids to Tonga, and we lived there for almost a year, all five of them. And I did not proper training there. That was kind of a holiday. I trained with another guy who used to fight for Lolo that was living in Tonga, and Winston Hello. And me and him would train every day together, good like pad work and stuff like that, but just more mucking around, you know, have a little spa and not proper training. So I came back from Tonga real fat, like real fat. And
a lot of good food over there as well.
Oh man, I came back, like I gained 20 kilos in that year that I was living there. So I was like too embarrassed to go to Lolo when I first came back. I was like,
it must be hard.
Yeah, I'm not coming back in this shape, like, but I've got to do something. So I got in touch with a friend of ours who was doing some training down at Shuriken in the North Shore.
Mm.
He was like a coach there, one of the coaches. So I went and did some pads with him to lose a bit of weight and got approached to if I'd be interested in trying MMA and to do this MMA fight. That's where the MMA started.
Oh, okay.
So I took a fight to lose weight. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna agree to take this MMA fight, which was actually for the IMMAF tournament in Las Vegas. So
wow.
But I was like, that's keen, you know, I was first really fight keen. Back and yeah. Like, I actually cut all my hair for this preparation. So I had a deal with Paolo Cerezo. He's a BJJ coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, I had to make a certain weight one week. And if I didn't, I had to do like 100 sprawls and then something else. And so I cut my hair to make the weight because it was going to be, you know.
What?
So I cut my hair was down like past my bum and then I cut it up to here.
How much weight did that take off?
I don't, you know, to be honest, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
I don't even know, but I know I was losing the weight and I got ready for the fight over a few months and that was with Shuriken. And we went over to Vegas and long story short, the girl that was in my weight division dropped to a different weight division. It was only me left. So I didn't get
an opponent.
Oh. But Kiwis, the Kiwis are great. Like, no matter where you are in the world, there's another Kiwi, you know they're going to look out, you know? And there was I really wish I remembered her name, but I have no idea what her name is. She works on the combat commissions or something over in for Nevada and spoke to Jason Voster, who's the coach for Shuriken, and said, I heard what happened to Gina. She didn't go over here and didn't get an opponent, but there's a kickboxing tournament. It was for the North American kickboxing championship or whatever the title. And would she be keen to go in? There's a girl here that doesn't have an opponent in her weight division. But I honestly, even though I was preparing for a kickboxing fight, MMA fight, I hadn't done any kickboxing training, only when I was young at Liga when I was, you know, 11 years old or something. But they chucked me in. I did great. Stopped the girl in the second round. Came home with this really cool medal and had won this North American kickboxing title, which I lost the point for in the first round for not throwing any kicks. My kicks were so rubbish, Ali, honestly. That was like I was kicking a piece of rubbish on the road, like away from my shoe or something. It was just like, boom. And then I stopped this girl, second round, which is cool because my first boxing fight, same thing, I stopped the girl second round. First kickboxing fight, I stopped the girl second round. So wow. I was like, oh, that's pretty dope. And then after that, I was kind of thinking I should pursue that a little bit and maybe jump in some more kickboxing fights. Then I came back and had met up with Lolo again and started doing my striking with Lolo. So I was still doing MMA training at Shuriken, but I was doing all my striking with Lolo. And eventually I just transitioned fully to training with Lolo. He'd brought in a wrestling coach, Amir, who was amazing from Dilworth. Amir, you the man. He's so dope. Honestly, he's like my Iranian papa. Mm. And so I was able to do everything at Balmoral Liga, which was cool, everything under one roof. And I guess that's where it kind of started. I had my first MMA fight for Lolo and my second one. And then
it just kept rolling on from
there. Well, BLG closed down for a little while.
Oh, okay.
So me and a few of my fellow BLG brothers moved over here to City Kickboxing, which was a given. I mean, the way that I look at it or I view it, and I'm sure a lot of my fellow fight brothers and sisters do as well, is, you know, your fight family is like your family tree, you know. Lolo was like the father of our gym, and he was unable at the time to do some trainings with us. So we go to the brother gym, which was Doug and Eugene had fought and trained for Lolo. I didn't personally know Eugene at the time, but I knew Doug because Doug used to come into BLG and still do a bit of training with us there. So yeah, I went with the brothers and I came over to City Kickboxing and then started to run amok.
I want to ask, like, during this whole period, during this whole period, you're competing, you're fighting and all that, and you're also a mother. Right.
A working mother for the first few years of it too, yeah.
Exactly. And like you have five kids, am I correct?
Yes.
Five kids. So how do you manage that, like, at that time? You know, how did you do it? You know, raising five kids, being a working mom, being a athlete, a fighter.
It comes down to how bad you want it. It really does. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do with it. It's not a game of tennis. It's not a game of netball with the girls. Mm-hmm. It's sacrifice, you know? So you have to ask yourself as a parent, is the things I'm sacrificing for this, is it going to bring something better for my family? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So missing out on, you know, watching kids' sports and that for trainings, is this training going to put me in a position that I can now be more with my children and provide a better life for my children? Yes, I believe it does. So I'm going to put in the sacrifice and the work for it. So you find a way. You find a way to do it. My children came to heaps of trainings with me when they were little. It's easier now they're older. My son's almost 16. My daughter's almost 15. You know, they're 1 or 2 months shy of being driving, you know. So it's a lot easier to be able to say, hey, I've got a late training tonight, or I've got an early training, you know, dinner's in the microwave. Make sure no one does anything stupid, you know what I mean, and leave. But when they were little, they just came with me and I trained during the day when the other children were at school. So you have to...
kind of juggle.
You juggle it, but you make it work because you want it that bad, you know?
Hey guys, Ali here. Just want to say thank you for listening to our podcast. We appreciate your love and your support. If you're not already on board, please do follow us on here and share it with your friends and family. If you prefer a visual experience, our videos are actually up on YouTube at the Ali channel. Please don't forget to subscribe, like, and share, and leave a comment or feedback if you like. And also, you can follow us on our socials at the_Ali_channel for Instagram, and on our Facebook page at the Ali channel. We'll see you soon, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. You know, what were one of the biggest challenges that you faced, you know, being a mum of five kids?
The biggest challenge of my life in general of being a mother, or even before I was a mother, would have been going through a divorce with their father. It was probably the hardest thing as a mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And this was, you were saying, after the second or the third child? Is that correct?
No.
Sorry.
They're all to the same father, my children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was, we got divorced 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the build up to the divorce was probably the hardest thing of, you know, being a mother. I'm a real strong, like, you have your family tree, you have mom, you have dad, you raise your children, then you enjoy your grandkids. You know, I'm big on that. So that was quite hard for me. But I still trained through it and still had a couple of fights during that time and still survived with my kids. You know, I didn't triumph as a mother during that time, but it was a very hard time for my family. And I'm, as hard as it was, I'm actually grateful for it in the same breath, because it gave me a set of skills, a new set of tools that I didn't know I had in me, you know. It taught me how to be a better mum in a lot of areas as well after that stuff. So.
Mm.
Training schedules can be difficult as a mum, because I miss things like if there's 8 a.m. trainings, you know, I miss seeing my kids walk off to school, little things like that, which is, it's difficult for me. Like, it's a bit more of a rush, and being in a fight camp where it might be like one of my kids' birthdays, or this is like a good one. For example, my son, my oldest boy, often plays in footy tournaments, and I often miss them because I've got sparring here on a Saturday or something, or I don't have time to travel where the tournament is and come back in time for my next training. So that's probably the hardest thing. Being a mum and trying to be an athlete as well, or build a career through this, is juggling my kids' sports and my sport. It's really difficult.
Mm.
Work, and that's not so much. You just get onto a routine, you plan work around your children and your training, but juggling five kids and their after-school activities and then my trainings is probably the hardest thing I have to do.
Mm.
But I've got heaps of help, though. Their dad's really good. My mum's really good. My cousins, they all play sports in the same team, so they kind of all jump in with their auntie and carpool. And but it doesn't mean I don't miss out, you know what I mean? So they're still okay getting there, but I miss out on enjoying watching them play. So probably the hardest.
Has any of your kids actually like talked to you about this or voiced out their...
Yeah, a lot, a lot. We talk about it a lot. We talk about it a lot. My oldest son is getting more of an understanding for it, of why I, you know, I can't be there. But like I said before, it's not a hobby for me. This is something I'm trying to build into a career that can provide for me and my kids. This is, that's what I'm aiming for. I don't just jump in and train the way that I do to have fun and because I like fighting, you know. I actually want to build something up for my family. So there's sacrifices that me and my children make, but we talk about it. We speak about it. I try and hear where they're coming from or how they feel about it. If one of them's upset, I can't attend something. Or my son had a kapa haka performance a few weeks back, and I had something on. Oh, this is before school finished in there, but I had a training that I needed to attend as well. So it was one of those, I'm not going to make it back with traffic, you know. And I just remind him that, remember when I go and I put time in at the gym, it's sacrifices that we're making to build something bigger, you know. It's only for a short time. It's not for a long time.
Mm.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but it is.
Well, I think that answers it pretty well. You know, on that topic of working and what we talked about off camera as well, on the topic of working and like being a fighter, because some, you know, you have some, maybe some of the younger generation that come up now and they want to just train full time,
yeah,
and not work,
yeah,
at the same time rely on like maybe for support from family or whatever.
Yeah, so this year I decided to fully commit to training, as in I will try and find an income around it, like PT,
mm-hmm,
train people at the gym, so I can work it in with my training and my kids. For me, I've always juggled working part-time, not full-time, but working part-time and having my children and trainings. And it had always been all right, you know, maybe for 5 years, 6 years, but something started to have to give, you know. Mm-hmm. I had to let something go, whether it was going to be less time with my children or less income or less training, but I had to let something kind of go. So I decided that I would only work around the gym, as in PT, one-on-ones,
mm-hmm,
and have more time with my kids and more energy to put into training, because I was so tired,
mm,
you know. Sometimes
working night shifts.
I'd work at the bars on a Wednesday, a Friday, and a Saturday night, you know, and I'd finish 4 or 5 in the morning and then come into training to train at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m., 10 o'clock. Sometimes I was coming to training and not even remembering what we just did as soon as I walk out of the door, because my brain's so tired, I didn't absorb any of it, you know. So I decided that I wanted to put more energy and time into this, so I stopped doing that, and now I just train one-on-one at the gym. I'll do boxing one-on-one and fit it in with the kids and training. But these young guns around here with no kids, you know, these youngins trying to train with no job, mm, you know, you can do both. You can do both for sure. I guess you just, how bad do you want it and how much income do you need, you know? That's all it comes down to.
Well, if you're really living like a simple life, you know, you just need to be able to make enough to fund your expenses, you know, your living expenses,
yeah,
you know, your rent, your food, your gym fees, and you know, just a bit of extra, yeah, for like savings and stuff like that.
But savings, Ali, oh, we, wow, live in New Zealand. Yeah. These youngins don't got no savings.
Well, that's the thing. Like you know, as hard as it is, like, and it's hard. You know, I'm not saying like, well, I don't know what the percentage of people who don't have savings, you know.
Yeah.
But like you think about it, like what if you get a period where, for example, you get hurt or you're injured, yeah, or whatever and you can't work?
Oh, for sure. I think ideally, yeah, everybody should have,
mm-hmm,
savings, whether you're being an athlete or not. Ideally, man, I'm pretty sure most of my friends don't have any savings. Mind you, we're all, all parents, like, as teenagers, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, just how bad do you want it? You want to be a fighter? You still got to, I guess, work to a certain point. That's it. I think it depends on, this is just my opinion, but I guess what level you want to be on and what level where are you at, you know? If you're trying to become a champion, but you've been fighting for 2 years, you've put in two years' work into this, maybe don't quit your job just yet. You know what I mean? Maybe keep your income and keep building this foundation here of training. And, you know, once you've had a few fights and had some good talks with your coach and you realize maybe you can build something from here and provide an income from this, then I guess you can reassess, you know, how much do you need your job? How much money do you need to earn a week? Am I going to put everything into training? You would come to that bridge then, you know, and then discuss it. I don't think not working at all when you're fresh in it for a minute is a bit...
It's a bit of a big decision if you don't want to...
Huge. Unless you got great parents and you're really young or you got some trust fund or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, well, you know... Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong. Some people have that, you know, they're fortunate enough to be from a family who can afford to support them,
for sure.
You know, up to a certain age. And that's just perfect.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. And like, you know, that's
But
fine.
There's always a way, you know. There's always a way. If you want it that bad, there's always a way. We're in New Zealand. There's always a way to find... something to make it work, you know what I mean? If you want this so bad, but you know you need to work, you're going to find a job that works in better with your training. Do you know what I mean? Or you might not work as many hours, so you just have the basics. Just a small sacrifice if you're wanting something bigger, you know?
There's always that you know, having to choose, you know, you've got to let go some of something to gain something of another.
You know,
you have to make that choice.
Yeah.
I think this is what, like, you know, some of the younger generations get, like, when I did the podcast with Eugene as well, and he talks that, you know, you have to have, when you're just starting, and, you know, you have to have something on the side. You got to build something as well. You have, and I think in this day and age, like, we really need to have multiple sources of income. You know, it's so hard to rely on just one. And I don't know about you, but I hate to know that, for example, if I do one job now, I work in an office, for example.
Yeah.
And if I can't do this job, I don't have any income. Like, that scares me.
Yeah.
The fact that if I don't have that, you know, I got nothing else. Like,
yeah.
So, like, I feel, you know, in this day and age, like, we need to really find multiple sources of income.
Yeah, for sure.
You just can't go.
Wow. Oh, honestly, I've done every job you can think of, Ali. Like... Being a parent at 16, man, I was...
You had your first child at 16.
I had my first child at 16. I was walking down the aisle getting married at 17, 5 months pregnant with my second baby. You know what I mean? Mm. So I've done every odd job, like... but I've always been good at whatever job I did, you know what I mean? I was a telemarketer. I got telemarketer of the year, like, first year working there. It was like, if I'm going to do that job, I want to be the best at it, you know? And I did. I've done cleaning. I've done sales. I've done... building, I've done, man, last Christmas, you know, was my first Christmas, sorry, the last two Christmases ago, what are we in, 2000? No, last Christmas, I demolished houses.
2021 now.
Yeah, so.
That'll be 3 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, 3 years ago. So I was demolishing houses over the Christmas break to get extra cash for Christmas. Wow. Like, honestly, like, suited up with the masks and, like, I did that and worked
the doors. That's actually a pretty cool job. Eh?
I liked it because I could use a sledgehammer. So I was like, this is just going to be like a workout. And they let me start late. So I'd get to do training in the morning, do a couple of classes, and then I'd cruise off and demolish down these walls and blah, blah, blah. But I've done heaps of different types of work just to make... you know, a bit of cash or what you need for tie you over or put a little bit of extra on the table that week. Mm. I've done it all. It doesn't, just because you got to find an income to provide your basic needs in order to do this, like, full-time training, it's not your career. You just do what you can do. Go get the job done, 6 hours, 7 hours, rip down some walls, clean some toilets, whatever. You know, it's this much of your future or your life. It's just an ends to a, what's the metaphor I'm looking for? An ends to a means?
Means to an end.
Means to an end. There you go. There's some freshness for your Saturday. Mm-hmm. A means to an end. You know what I mean? It's not like the whole picture. Mm-hmm. I've done it all.
And okay, like talking about like you were just saying about working night shifts. So I understand you or what you have been doing for a while was a bouncer.
Yeah, I love it. I miss it too. I miss it. It's dope. Working the doors is cool. Shout out to Big Al's. Yeah, it was heaps of fun. And I just stopped because it was just too much, you know, not enough sleep when you're having to be in here and give your all here and give your all to the kids and being up so many hours, you know.
And also like, man, working as a bouncer or security at like nightclubs and bars and this, like that is, I would say that is actually a dangerous job.
Yeah. I did work at some nice places, and I worked at some that were a little bit more ghetto, but it's the naughty in me likes being in the rougher bars, I think.
But tell us, man. Tell us some crazy stories, Gina.
Oh, right. This was maybe my first or second shift on the doors maybe a couple years ago. And Billy, shout out to Billy, the doco putting me on. It was my first shift and this guy was like mucking around. I can't remember what he was doing. He was, that's right. He was wanting to DJ. So he was like, oh, I just got the stories mixed up. Wait, this was not my first shift, but I was new. This was only like, I'd only been here a few weeks. This is another one. And the owner was calling me over to the bar. There was a guy behind the bar. He wouldn't like get out, so the owner was saying like come grab him. So I walked over and I was like, hey man, you know the owner wants you to come out onto the other side of the bar.
He's on the bartender side.
What is he doing on the bartender side? Okay, so this guy was big too. This guy was quite big, like he was skinny but he was quite tall, because I remember when I was talking to him I had to kind of look up, you know. And I was like, I always approach, you know, friendly and kind.
Respectfully, yeah.
9 times out of 10, that's all it takes. If you just approach correctly, they usually are like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, you know, and they'll come out and listen. But this guy was not having it. So I was like, excuse me, sir, you know, you need to come onto the other side of the bar and we need to go outside. And he was like, no, I want to DJ. And I was like, you can't DJ, brother. You can't DJ tonight. But because he was so wasted, I was saying to him, you know, come in tomorrow. All good. Come tomorrow and we'll have a chat about it, you know. Just trying to get him out
and de-escalate.
But I was eyeing up his wrist the whole time. And then he kept going and the owner looked at me again. I was like, right mate, you gotta go. So I went to go and gently just hold on to his arm to his wrist to pull him out to the other side. And he was like, boom, you know, like kind of flicked his hand aggressively towards me.
Yeah.
So I did this arm drag. Thank you, Steve Oliver. You taught me this when I started working the doors. I did this arm drag and straight away I did it like boom. Dragged him out, kicked the back of his leg and just chucked a seatbelt and then a choke, put this choke on him. And I started dragging him outside. He was quite a bit taller. So I'm like dragging him out. Got him to the stairs, dragged him down the stairs like this. Because I was like, you know, boom, boom, boom. And then I like placed him onto the footpath and the boss came out and he was like, hey, to me. And I'm like, hey, I thought I did like a great job. You know what I mean? I like secured the guy, locked him up, like choked him, dragged him out. And then they came out and said to me, no, you can't do that. You have to leave them at the bar door. As soon as you take them across the street. So this is when I learned this rule.
Okay.
When you take them out, you can't take the people across the road, because now it's like not a bar job. It's like, I've just taken you out to the street. So I was like, makes sense.
Okay.
So that night I learned you got to take them out, drop them off at the door. You're not allowed to take them across the road. So, and they fall asleep very quickly if they've had something to drink. So you have to be really careful. And now I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to do that. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So
I think it's dangerous, but like, you know, at the same time, you're dealing with a drunk person. This is not a
Well, he got aggressive with me as well. So the way that he kind of went like that to me is I guess when you train every day, your reactions is just a little bit quicker. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and I'm a female. So the guys never expect. I've been able to drag a few out. And I think it's the element of surprise, you know, it's just the element of surprise. They do not expect a female to pick them up or drag them out. It just...
Yeah, a bit disrespectful, but like, you know, but that's the thing, like when you're dealing with somebody who's intoxicated and like, you never know what
to
expect.
And I always give three chances. So I approach I approach nicely and I try and communicate with them and get them to listen three times. It's always three times.
I think the latest interesting one was a video someone shared of David, Izzy's brother, who was working on the doors somewhere.
Oh, and really?
Like, yeah, I don't know if you've seen it, but I might show you later. But there's a young kid, like a teenager, whatever, and his dad. Both were, I think they were quite drunk or whatever, and they were, I think they might have done some stupid shit, whatever. Yeah, they got them kicked out in the first place.
Yeah.
And so obviously now you're kicked out outside of the venue.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like you're standing out the front and like you're, you know, going off at the security, and like it's not his fault, man. Like, you know what I mean? You probably would have done some stupid shit that got you kicked out in the first place. And now you're going off at this guy who's just doing his job, man.
Yeah.
And trying to be as respectful as he can to you, and you're like, you're going off shouting in his face, like, what
I've seen some stuff. I've seen some stuff. And people do, I mean, like you said, we're only doing our job. And I've all the security that I've worked with at the nightclubs, they always approach first respectfully. We always ask, you know, or ask you to come outside or to stop doing whatever it is you're doing, or we'll warn you a couple of times about whatever it is you've done. But yeah, people, they do. They give bouncers a hard time if they get kicked out. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other ones, one of the questions I wanted to ask was, this was actually a question from Eugene. So let's get to this question. There was a particular time where there was a guy who came for one of the training sessions here, and he actually asked Eugene, is that Gina? And so Eugene said yes, and he told Eugene some stories. But anyway, I want to hear your side of the story of what actually happened. So apparently it was the scooter story.
Oh, this one. Yeah. So I was like, what one are you going to come up with? Yeah. Jesse's scooter.
Yeah, Jesse.
I'm sorry, Jesse, my man. Listen, we were kids back then, brother, you know?
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the days, brother.
What happened there, Gina? Tell us.
At the time I was at, because I went to a few high schools, Ali. And at the time, I was at Long Bay College. And
What was the, if I may ask, what was the reason for you moving around school? Was it a relocation or?
No, Ali, I was an asshole. Like, honestly, 9 times out of 10, it was fighting. It was, I was always just, I had some problems at school. Yeah. School wasn't my thing. So 2 years old, I was in a kindergarten in Browns Bay, and I climbed up the treehouse and jumped over the fence and just walked home. Like, not even 3 years old, I just walked home.
What?
My mum was like, what the heck? No one called the police. Like, this 2-year-old walking around. It wasn't far though. Like, the kindergarten was on the side of a field. We lived at the back. So I've just, school and kindies and that never really worked for me. But Jesse, I was at Long Bay, and he was older than me though. So I would have been like, I don't know the years, what they call it now, but I was third form. And he was like maybe fourth form or fifth form. So I was around 13. And there wasn't many Tongans at our school, like at Long Bay. There was just a small little group of Tongans, but we, you know, we all kind of hung out. And there was, the only girls was me and my cousin Sam. And anyway, we were at Browns Bay Beach. Yeah, I think it was Browns Bay Beach. And I told him, hey, bro, let me, we're at Long Bay. And I told him, let me have a go on your nifty 50. You know, those little scooters you sit down on. And he was like, no, you're going to keep it. And I was like, come on, bro, like, let me have a go. And he was like, okay, so this was at Long Bay. I jumped on it and I gapped it. Like, I took off on the road, like, no shoes, no helmet. And I'm like, yeah, thinking I'm the man, like, cruising, like, beeping past my friends' houses, like, and I get all the way to Browns Bay Beach, which is like a couple of bays over. And I'm just like cruising with all my mates, like a couple of the other boys on the back and maybe three of us on the scooter and poor Jesse.
You brought this back to the islands.
But Jesse's description of this incident is that he came down to Browns Bay looking for it. And he's like, she had my scooter at the beach with all the Tongans from school on the back of the scooter. But it wasn't. He called the police on me.
Yeah.
He called the cops and... obviously, I gave it back I was like, man, we're only having a bit of fun. But it's just funny that he remembered it. I thought you were going to ask me about a different story, but that one's a good one, yeah.
Oh, what's
that
different
one? No. We'll save that one for another time. But yeah, so Jesse ended up here. And there's a few times that's happened now. People have like been in here and then they see me and they're like, hey, Eugene, you know, share a story of me at work or something like. But yeah, sorry, Jesse. I am sorry.
Yeah. Oh, well, like it happened back in the day when you guys were kids.
Back in the day.
And obviously now you guys have a laugh and like, you know, you laugh it off.
Well, I was laughing when I saw it. Sorry. And yeah.
Well, I'm sure that he probably has a laugh too. Like, yeah. You can't. I mean, it's quite hard for you to hold on to a grudge that long. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're adults now, when you look back at it, you know,
it's funny. Yeah.
It's funny. Have a laugh, you know, like nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as bad as you think.
Yeah.
It, you know? I'm sure Jesse, Gina doesn't mean to.
I meant no harm, brother. No. I'm a changed girl now.
Hey guys, Ali here. Just want to say thank you for listening to our podcast. We appreciate your love and your support. If you're not already on board, please do follow us on here and share it with your friends and family. If you prefer a visual experience, our videos are actually up on YouTube at the Ali channel. Please don't forget to subscribe, like and share and leave a comment or feedback if you like. And also you can follow us on our socials at the_Ali_channel for Instagram. And on our Facebook page at The Ali Channel. We'll see you soon and I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast.
You know, you're training heaps. What is your goals like for this year? What is your plans?
My goals for this year for 2021 is just get some fights. Get some fights.
Boxing,
I just want to get busy.
Kickboxing, MMA.
MMA is what I am wanting to focus on, but I haven't closed my boxing door yet, you know, so there's still a few things I want to achieve. I'd like to have a couple more boxing fights. I'd like the opportunity to fight for a New Zealand boxing title. The titles that I have are all from the amateurs and from Australia, so I really want to have a New Zealand boxing title before I close that door. You know, it's only fair. I put in a lot of years into boxing and I just...
Well, that was the first sport you kind of
My first love. Like I loved Muay Thai when I was younger, but I didn't compete. It was different, you know. Boxing really is kind of my baby and I do want to fight for a title before I close that door. But MMA is where it's at for me. And I love that cage just a little bit more. There's something about them closing the door.
Yeah, and you're stuck.
No, I like it. I'm like, I don't know. There's something about that cage door closing. And they're just like, yeah. But MMA is where I would like to build
a future
for my family. If I can do that, that's where I want to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, especially with how the success of City Kickboxing in the recent years, where City Kickboxing has got to, you know, it's a perfect platform
for me to explore MMA a little more. Yeah, for sure, it is. I think more than the whole platform of you know, they're really on the map. City Kickboxing is doing massive things in the world of MMA, but that's not what drew me here, if that makes sense.
In the beginning,
it wasn't what drew me here. It was having like other fellow teammates that are
connections
and were already here and established in their fight game, you know, and I wanted to be here with them as well, like the Vakes. The Vake boys. Hey, shout out to my Vakes. Vake boys. John, you're my favorite. No.
Oh, you gotta be careful. Can't say those
I know. I gotta stop telling them all individually that they're my favorite secretly, eh? But yeah, I trained with them for a long time at BLG before that they came here too. So I came more for that, having your team's really super important, eh? Like you go through a lot in this.
Inside and outside.
Inside and outside. Mm. I think you go through more outside, you know. You want a tight-knit family and you spend so much time here. You're around these people every day, you know, day in, day out, 6 days a week. Sometimes I feel I see the team, like the boys and the girls here more than I see my kids, you know. They're at school. They got their own things too. It's only nighttime. I spend so much time here that it's there's Kevin's plate, say.
Yeah, yeah. It is, yeah.
I think I answered that question wrong. It's I needed a tight family, and this is where I thought the best place for me to come to was gonna be more than the platform. It was the family, the boys being here. I had to come,
While you were, like, you know, when you started boxing, fighting, MMA and all that, was there any role models for you, or who did you, like, who was an important person in this whole journey for you? Was there anyone you looked up to, got a lot of advice from?
I don't know how to put this without sounding like a bit of an egg, but I was never, like, an MMA fan. Like, I didn't, even now I don't really know who's who in the UFC or all the girls' names. Like, there's some girls here at City Kickboxing that can tell me, like, oh yeah, this girl's in this weight division and she's done da 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 da. I never followed it like that. I just know I love fighting, and the people around me, like my teammates, are the ones that give me advice, or I follow their journey, or learn from them. There's no one that really, do you mean like inspired me to start or something?
Or
you know, some people are like, oh, as soon as I saw the Rocky movie, I was like, I'm gonna box. Nothing like that ever happened to me. I just loved fighting, and yeah, that's it. As I started to train more in MMA, I started to watch the girls in my division. And when I first started training, Nunez was always one that I thought she was a badass. You know what I mean? She come in like, what's good, and really was demolishing these girls. So I've always thought she was
cool.
Cool, yeah. Ronda Rousey, she did amazing for women in the sport. I wouldn't call myself like a Rousey fan, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch her fights and stuff like that, but I respect what she's done for the sport. She's put women, like, you on know the there's mic. Girls getting coined the same as the boys now, or they're making more, they're headlining the fights, they're in the main events now, like, and I think a lot of that comes down to her. So same again, it didn't inspire me to start, but a little bit of a, I don't know what word to use for it. Yeah, Ronda Rousey and Amanda Nunes. I probably the only two females I really like took on. Holly Holm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Holly Holm's a badass.
She is, what's her
actually,
age?
Actually, that's, what? I am a fan. I'm a Holly Holm's fan. I think she's pretty dope.
She is. And like, especially the fact that she's not as young as most of the other girls.
She's not, and she's kicking ass. She stays in there, and she's like, she's dope. Oh, Ali, you just made me realize I'm a fangirl now. I always thought I wasn't a fangirl, but I was like, actually, she dope.
I think she's like she sets a really good example.
Yeah, she's she came into with like a real strong striking background, she's a badass. So maybe her.
All right, now we've come to the section, wise words from the wise lady. So for people who are watching, listening, Gina, what sort of advice would you give them? just can be anything. Like, you, if, you, it want, if it wants to be like with anything to do with fighting, outside life.
Ali, I can't even read and write English properly. You want me to give some wide words, brother? Listen to the bouncers when you go in nightclubs.
Okay.
Wise words. Mm.
But okay. Oh,
and just life in general.
General, like
general life.
Based on your experiences, what is like? If you could give someone or anyone an advice, what you've went through, what would it be?
Of what I've gone through. Mm. A word of advice from Gina G is don't start a family too late in life. Don't start a family too late in life. You can always do stuff and you can always get stuff done. But a family tree is, that's what we're here for. You know what I mean? We're here to build family trees and leave legacies. Oh, Ali.
That's a good one.
Build family trees and leave legacies.
Leave legacies.
Straight up. That's the realest of the real. Build you a family and leave you a legacy.
What about like the, you know, people argue that having a family, you know, it's like that people argue these days that it's a financial burden. How do you work around that? Like, what do your advice be for people who are so worried about like the financial side of it?
If you're always worried about money though, it's always going to be about money. You know what I mean? Mm. Like there's always ways around it. There's always ways around it. In my opinion anyway, and this is coming from someone that's never really had a lot too. You know what I mean? So you could put someone else in the chair that's comes from a total different background. You know, for me, because I've been a parent at 16, a young parent, 5 kids, I know it's a struggle. I know hands down it's a struggle. But what you get and what you learn from having a family outweighs
It's priceless.
Outweighs financial stuff, man. Like, you know what I mean? People are always going to want a bigger house. People are always going to want a better car. You know, I've had conversations with friends that have no children yet that want to wait till they can afford a certain car, and I'm like mind boggled. But that's just me. That's just me and who I am. I'm mind boggled. I'm like, man, you have no idea. Like, when you, I don't know. For becoming me, Ali, family mom. Is just becoming a mom, hands down. Best blessing I could have ever experienced.
And well, obviously, you know, your kids, as they get older, you enjoy, like, you know, looking at them grow, looking at their accomplishment.
Yeah.
As much as you chasing yours as well.
Yeah.
And I understand one of your boys, your elder boys, he's quite into footy as well.
Yes. My older son, Ezekiel, shout out to Easy. Yeah, something really special for our family is my son has worked really hard and has been able to get a scholarship into St. Kent's next year.
Wow.
So I'm really excited to watch his journey and watch him grow and help prepare him for things ahead. So,
do you think that in a lot of ways, like when your kids look at you working hard, chasing and achieving this stuff that you're doing, you're leading by example, you know?
I sure hope so, Ali. I really do, because I never really thought of it like that before, you know? And
the one person that they like kids look up to is their parents. Like, is their parents. So, like, you can't go wrong there. Like, you know, you're leading by example.
Yeah.
Right? And in a lot of ways, I think it will rub off on your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I never took the time to, like, think about it or even, think about how much them watching me from a young age, how it will impact them or if it will impact them at all, you know. But it has and it does. Like, my son said to me the other day, do you remember when we followed you in the car that night, you had to do your run and they were yelling out to me out the car window? And I was like, it almost made me want to cry. I was thinking, that is dope. That was years ago. I just started boxing. And my oldest boy, he remembered. He was like, I remember we used to follow you on the runs in the car, you know, because where we stayed, it was a little bit rough. Even though I was like, man, I can't wait for someone to jump out them bushes. You know what I mean? Someone jump out them bushes. But their father would follow me in the car, you know. And, he remembered that. And that was special to me that he brought that up to me, you know. That it made me realize, wow, it does impact them, you know, because he goes for his runs. He worked really hard before he got his scholarship. He's always aware of his fitness. He's always like, Mom, you know, I gotta do a bit more of short runs and long runs and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, he takes time to really think about his training. I talk about mine with him all the time, and I'm grateful that now I can see, oh wow, it does impact them. You know what I mean? Because we're so busy, I never thought about
it before. It's crazy, like this, the stories that he's gonna have, you know, for the next future generation. This is exactly what we're doing now, what you're talking about, you just said. These are like the stories that he's going to bring to his kids. Yeah. You know? He's going to tell, you know, like, can you, like, imagine, play this back in your head right now. You know, years down the road, he's going to be telling his kids these stories.
I know.
How his mom was training and, like, man.
He'll have some pretty dope stories, you know. For sure. We've got some crazy ones. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
If any of your kids wanted to like pick up fighting or... You know,
they will, and a couple of them do.
They do?
Yeah, Ali. Mm. And my baby girl will come over here, give you a good +3/+2. My baby girl is good.
Did they like voice it out to
you? Yeah, they do.
How was your first reaction to that?
My youngest daughter really wants to kickbox. Like,
how old is she
really
now?
Bad, and she wants to wrestle. She's 9. So we do a little bit of pads at home, and another really good friend of mine, shout out to Audrey, my French fry. she does a little bit of pads with Daisy sometimes too. She's a really good kickboxer. Mm-hmm. So Daisy will be an up-and-comer for sure. I just don't want to she really loves wrestling too. I let her wrestle with my son at home, who's a year older than her, and they do pretty good, actually. And I was really surprised. I think, I don't know if it's the whole natural, back in the days, naturally we, you know, used to go to war and wrestle and stuff like that. Mm. If naturally, because they haven't been coached by anyone yet, they just have some good little moves. Or if it's from watching a lot, you know what I mean? And what, coming to trainings and passing by and without even noticing they're learning. But she's pretty good, Daisy, and she'll do pretty well. I don't want to bring her... into the gym yet. I know some people bring their kids in really young, which is great, really cool. For me and what I'm doing at the moment, it's probably too much, I think, to bring her and commit to her a couple days a week training here when, you know, she plays basketball and netball, does a few other little things. Oh, sorry, not netball, basketball. Mm-hmm. And when she's maybe in intermediate school, I'll probably start bringing her in for wrestling and kickboxing. And same with my middle boy, Zedekiah. He's 12. He's a big boy. He got some good boxing skills. See, my father boxed. My dad was a boxer. My granddad was a boxer.
Wow.
And on my mum's side of the family, a few of her uncles were boxers. It's in our genes, you know what I mean? It really is.
Family, coming from a family fighting.
We all like fighting. We've all been all right at it. Zedekiah for sure will jump in some boxing, and Daisy wants to have a go at kickboxing. So
nice. Did they approach you, like, you know, and tell you that they wanted to do that? How did they?
Yeah, my son Zedekiah is always like, Mom, I want to come and do some sparring. And I told him, boy, you got to hit the road first. You got to do some running first. You know what I mean? You got to put in that other work, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't just get to come and chuck in your mouth guard and, you know. Spa, but he loves boxing. He loves to watch it. He loves jumping on the pads with me. I still try to keep it really fun and light with them when we do some training at home. But he definitely will box, and Daisy will probably kickbox a little bit. Whether they build careers out of it or not, I have no idea, but it will be something that they try. Yeah.
Perfect. Anyway, before we go, we can pretty much wrap it up there. But Gina, do you have any shout outs or any mentions to anybody or anyone you want to say a message to, anything like that? Is there a few? Getting a list out now?
I don't know. Who do you shout out to?
Whoever. Anybody who's might have helped you in your journey or in whatever, or sponsors, or yeah, usually that's what, you know.
I'll just do a quick shout out to my kids, Ezekiel, Kazia, Z-Boy, Momo, and Daisy. Yeah. Mm. And a thanks to Eugene for chucking me in the hot seat.
Oh, yes, he was. He actually put you on, and, you know, it was actually in his podcast at the end of it. He said, you know, that Gina has to be on the podcast. So special recommendation there. We had to get you on. And But anyway, Gina, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Coming, doing the podcast with us. I appreciate, you know, you just sharing, you know, details of your life stories, your whole journey. and you know, up to where you are today.
Yeah.
And you know, it's I think for me, honestly, I feel that it's super necessary, the story that you sharing your personal story.
Yeah.
And you know, just to mums out there, single mums, you know, people who are experiencing, like, you know, because not everybody can go through something like that.
Well, you
and
know,
come out, you know.
Ali, I gotta tell you straight up, like, I never ever looked at my life like it was a crazy one, right? Until this year, I just learned about myself that I'm an extremist, you know? Who has 5 kids under 6? Who moves to Australia 9 months pregnant with their 5th baby with 4 other little kids under 5 years old away from all their family and friends and just packs up and just moves? You know, I do. Who works and trains and raises a family? Extremist. Like, it's not normal, but it's doable. You know what I mean?
And that's exactly what I mean. Like, you know, sometimes, like, when we are in our own shoes, for us, it's normal.
Yeah, you just keep rolling on. You're exactly. Like, yeah, this is my life, you
but
know?
But to someone else, you are, like you say, an extremist, yeah. You know? And some people are in points of their life where they think it's not possible or it's too hard or
yeah.
Or they just need to hear their stories. And, like,
yeah.
You know, I really appreciate you sharing these stories with us. And, you know, I hope that people can benefit and learn and something from, you know, this podcast yeah. That we did today. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to your future in boxing, MMA, or whichever that you wish to yeah. pursue. And I'm sure you're going to do big things, great things. And at the end of the day, you know, I feel like your kids, you know, they have a really good role model to teach them. And that's what being a parent is. And that's what you said, you know. And hopefully to all your 5 kids, I hope you you guys realize what kind of sacrifice your mom's putting out here for you. And yeah, anyway, Gina, thank you very much. Let's wrap
thank
it up
you,
there.
Brother. Thank you.
Cheers. That's us.
Hey guys, Ali here. Just want to say thank you for listening to our podcast. We appreciate your love and your support. If you're not already on board, please do follow us on here and share it with your friends and family. If you prefer a visual experience, our videos are actually up on YouTube at the Ali channel. Please don't forget to subscribe, like and share, and leave a comment or feedback if you like. And also you can follow us on our socials at the_Ali_channel for Instagram and on our Facebook page at the Ali channel. We'll see you soon.